episode of the Stratcom podcast. My name is Lena Zurich, and I'm the communications officer here at the NATO Strategic Communications Center of Excellence. Today we are using an opportunity to talk about our academic journal, Volume 8, and one of the articles in it is titled Disinformation, Societal Impact, Britain, COVID, and Beyond. Today we are having a conversation with Francesca Granelli, who will tell us a bit more about the article and the research she participated in. Hello, Francesca.
Hi, thank you very much. It's great to talk to you.
Could you give me an insight into the idea behind the article and the research that you conducted?
Okay, well, to start off with, we're looking at people obviously spreading falsehoods, misleading information, and it's the deliberate spreading of this that we're looking at and focusing on, and how that's really affecting people and how it's affecting people's trust in people in power and others in society. Now, I mean, it may not sound like breaking news, but what we found is that lots of these mechanisms are happening offline as well as online. Another area that we're looking at is that we're trying to get past the original area that this research has been focusing on, which is the initial impact and spread. And we were actually trying to get underneath the skin of that and explore some of the tensions. So the tensions between, as you've mentioned, the research and the policy, between the assertions and the evidence, between the external and the internal threats, traditional media and the social media, and the sort of offline and online impacts. So we just wanted to take that research that bit further. We've seen so much. There's been such an explosion in this area. But a lot of it is focused very much online. A lot of it is focused from external threats, as opposed to what's happening within countries and within, say, their own politicians or their own media. And also really looking at the impact. To date, a lot of it has been on spread as opposed to the actual impact. So this idea of social cohesion, trust in institutions, trust in politicians, for example. So that's really where it's come from. So I've probably given you a lot there.
So you looked also, as you already mentioned, at limitations of research and that it's mostly focused on online environment. And so when you look at policy responses, what's your take on how to tackle the problem of disinformation?
Thank you for starting with a really easy question there. What would I say? Well, a lot of it is focusing on stopping that spread. And some of it is moving into the idea of making the citizen a much more critical thinker. Obviously, both of those are important, but they come across so many hurdles. So if you start stopping people talking to one another, you're coming up against the battle of freedom of speech. If you're making your citizens more of critical thinkers, then they're going to be critical of your own policies and your own governments. So that's a bit of a double-edged sword as well. So what would I say? I think part of it is just recognizing people's responsibilities at one end of the scale. So where it's individuals to individuals, where it's more of the traditional media, I think it's understanding what the problem actually is, what its impact truly is, and then making individuals responsible. Obviously, when it comes to things like the external threat, that becomes much more challenging, and that is really for the state to answer. And I think we're starting to see policies going on there, but it's an uphill battle. We're talking about these disinformation, these messages at an industrial scale. So you almost have to be industrial to challenge them back. But I think with much more nuance of understanding exactly what the disinformation is, I think if we break it down, we'll have much better policy responses to it, as opposed to wrapping it up under one banner and trying to deal with it in one sort of whole mass almost.
So you think, are you talking about like distinguishing in between disinformation and misinformation, or even further?
Further than that, so where is it coming from? So is it external? Is it internal? Is it from other organizations? So for example, the traditional media, either reporting on it and not realizing what they're doing, or actually wrapped up in their own editorials. We're seeing a lot more of that because of the change in the way that traditional media, its business model is actually working. They've changed. So it's less about reporting the news and more about stating an opinion. Well, the minute you change that editorial balance, you're setting yourself up for, to be honest, falsehoods. It's a little bit difficult. Are they deliberate or are they an accident? But I think they need to be taken to account for this and need to understand what they're actually doing.
You also mentioned the inoculation, which has been like a very trendy idea around the issue of disinformation and fake news. So what's your take on inoculation?
Well, as you probably know, and you're smiling at me, inoculation has been dismissed as a sort of in communications anyhow. And I would say that while it sounds like quite a nice metaphor and it's sort of, it's catchy, isn't it? If you're talking about it, I don't think it works. It certainly doesn't work for me.
And can you tell a bit more? You were looking also at the COVID conspiracies, different conspiracies and how they have been spreading. Can you tell a bit more about that?
Okay, well, that plays in, a lot of it plays into a group in society who basically believe in conspiracies anyhow. It's obviously playing into the anti-vax narrative that's sitting there. You've then got external threats and parties that are using it to sort of divide and fracture society. So this is one of those areas where there's lots of different parties almost at play and working on this. Then you add that to countries themselves, and I'm not picking any country out in particular, but their response hasn't necessarily been as quick, as clear and consistent as you'd like it to be. So they're almost adding into this whole situation of actually what are we supposed to believe. I think the scientists are doing a very good job, but even because of the way the scientists are approaching it, which is from different angles, they often appear to be disagreeing with one another, which also sort of plays into this, which ones do we actually believe? We're desperately trying to get back to the idea that you do trust experts. And I think this, the COVID has sort of flagged up that there's a lot of work still to be done in this space.
And another really important aspect is the cultural context. And do you think that there is, at least within Europe or allied countries, there's an overarching like take on disinformation that could work, or it's really, really depending on each country and even, you know, region within the country?
I think it's very different between each and every country. And we like to sit here and all say that, you know, in Europe, we're all very similar and we're working towards the same goals, but history, experience, habits, traditions all play into this. And it's created quite a different response and quite a different attitude to how information shared. Again, I wouldn't really want to pick on any particular countries, but you're seeing a vast range of that.
Francesca, you also have an upcoming book. Would you want to tell us a bit more about that as well?
Well, that's very kind of you. So my book is all about trust, politics and revolution, and it's a European history. So I actually look at this aspect of how trust and revolution really intersect with one another and how the changing meaning and the changing way that we trust affects how we understand and interpret revolution. And I'm looking at 2,500 years of history. So I hope everyone picks up a book and really enjoys it. Thank you.
Thank you.